Welcome to the Invest in Mail Woman of Action Show, and do I have a treat for you. Today I'm meeting with Dawn Bentwyford. She has flipped over 2,000 properties and has also wholesaled 75 deals in 1 year. She's gonna share with you how she did it and her whole journey. Stay tuned. Dawn, thank you so much for being on the Woman of Action. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so excited, Mel. This is going to be great.
Yes, I know we had a chat earlier and I just love your energy. I feel like I've known you for years. I'm super excited to have you on the show. Guys, you have a nice treat for you today. So Dawn, can you go ahead and introduce you to everyone?
Sure. So my name is Dawn Bentwyford. I'm America's most sought after real estate investor. And I have a podcast where I did a play on my name. So it's called the most wonderful real estate podcast ever. Why not have some fun with it, you know? And I've been investing for 30 years. I started off as a broke single mom, needing something to do, a way to raise my child. Didn't want to put her in daycare. Didn't want to get a job. Real estate investing found me. And now 2,000 deals later, 3 bestsellers. Rehabbing a town. So I don't know, I've been busy.
Wow, we have so much to dig into today. That's fantastic. So how did it all start? Let's rewind on your journey here, because you've done so many things that I want to tap into. How did it all start? So you mentioned you were a single mom. And is that when you decided that you wanted real estate? What does that look like for you?
So the funny thing is I never even knew what the term, like I did rehabbing. So I bought houses and like rehabbed the whole house and sold them. And never any place in my mind did I ever think, oh, I'll be a real estate investor. That would be fun. So basically in my 20s, it was the 80s and I did a lot of cocaine and I drank a lot of champagne. I worked in a lot of clubs and I was just stupid. And basically I wasted a whole entire decade. I'm just, thank God I didn't like die from all that craziness. And then, so I got 30 and I got married and I had a baby and I thought, you know, I'm going to be like Susie Homemaker and be like the Girl Scout mom and the homeroom mom and go on the field trips and bake the cookies. And sadly, when my daughter was 8 months old, her dad and I split up. And it was real unexpected. And it was nasty. And he took the money in the car. I was living in an apartment. I had a baby. I had $75 on my purse. And I was like, really, it was just really dark. I was just really like, oh my God, like, I don't know what to do. And so of course I have all my well-meaning family. Leave Florida and move back to Ohio. Live with us. We'll take care of you. Bring your baby back home. And I just thought, oh my God, live back at my parents' house in Ohio or go into the ocean and pray a shark eats me. Like that's kind of, that's kind of how I felt. Like those were kind of how my options. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to put on my big girl pants. I'm going to figure out a way that I can work from home. I'm going to raise this daughter. I'm going to keep my plan. I'm going to be that homeroom mother. I'm going to be that Girl Scout mom. I'm doing that. And I just have to figure it out. Now, I knew nothing about business. I knew nothing about anything, really. And, you know, and I know you're a lot younger. So back 30 years ago, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't even have a pagers yet. So we had to find jobs in the classified section of the newspaper. So I'm looking in the newspaper and I'm going to these interviews and almost everything was multi-level marketing. So I'm seeing the same people kind of at all these different ballrooms and I'm thinking, okay, I totally get multi-level marketing is money, but like I need money now, like I need money to eat. And so I kept seeing some of the same people, you know, I just talked to everybody and struck up a conversation and I met these two guys and they said, oh, we buy houses and we fix them up and we sell them. So my mind heard buy houses, fix it up and decorate it and sell it. And I thought, I have excellent taste. I'm a good decorator. I love fashion and stuff like that. I'm going to decorate houses. That's what I'm going to be, a house decorator. So that I honestly, from the bottom of my soul, Mel, on my first deal, I thought I was just going to decorate it, fix it, paint it, carpet it, custom make some blinds. And sell it.
But there was a whole different route that you're gonna discover.
Oh my God. So I moved into it because I couldn't afford like to live here and live here. So actually on my first deal, because you and I talked a little bit about the woman that I worked with on the first deal, we did like an owner partner situation. She was losing her house. And the funny thing is I didn't know anything about paperwork and contracts. So basically we like did a handshake and a big hug and put a deal together. And when I look back, I had nothing. I had a sales contract and I moved into this house and I had a Home Depot credit card. So I was at Home Depot and taking classes and learning how to fix this house. And Barbara moved out and we just made this deal. And like, thank God I was honest and she was honest. And at the end we split it and I made $22,000. And wow. I was like, and you know, so, you know, like, I guess I just kind of made the payments and, you know, sort of carried the paper. It was just a real creative, it was a crazy creative deal that if one of my students came to me today, I'd be like, no. Not without a whole lot of paperwork. And, but you know, it just worked out for her. It worked out for me. But when I got that check, I just remember looking at that and, you know, this is in like 1990 and $22,000 is a lot of money now. That was really a lot of money back then. And I had never made that much money in a whole entire year waiting tables. And I had this check and I was like, oh my gosh, I can do this. I'm going to do it again. And if I make $20,000 on the next one, I'm gonna do it again. And then I can actually raise my daughter, like, woo. But I still only understood rehabbing. We didn't have any real estate groups yet. There was nothing, there were no seminars. Like none of that stuff was out there yet. Other than Carlton Sheets was on TV, probably in the whole world. And that was it. So I would move in, fix them up, and move in and fix them up, and move in and fix them up till she started kindergarten.
I do want to rewind a little bit because when you were doing all that flipping, you did something that most people wouldn't do, and that's sacrifice or, you know, do something uncomfortable with the moving and the daughter in the short term in order to create the life you wanted, obviously, in the long term. So how was that? Because I'm sure a single mom moving around and flipping, I'm sure it wasn't easy. So how did you get that mindset? Because most people would just say, oh, I can't do it. I don't want to do it. How did you decide that it was worth it?
You know, it's so funny, Mel. It's just so funny when you're in, because I was really in survival mode. I was not in the mode like, oh, my husband and I, we want to buy houses. We want to be investors. That'd be so fun. I was in like, I always want to say to people, if you raise your kids in daycare, God bless you. There's nothing wrong with that. But I waited till I was 30 because I really wanted to be that homeroom mom. Like I really wanted to do that field trip. I wanted that, you know? And so I didn't want to give it up just because my ex was a jerk. It's like, well, why I don't have to have all my dreams crushed. So when the first deal came up, I thought, well, okay, I'm going to live in the house and I'll fix it up. So what I did is I got rid of all my furniture. I kept a bedroom furniture and a bed for Ayla. And I would first fix up the master bedroom, move into it, and I would rehab the whole house while I was living in it. So Ayla and I we would sleep in the same room, and you know, she had her toys, and in the rest of the house, I gave her crayons and she was drawing and painting and you know, listening to Disney sing-along music, and we'd go for walks. It was fun. And then I would move the same thing, the same bedroom, I'd move, unpack that one room, work on the rest of the house. And then when I finally thought, okay, she's going to start school next year. I've already moved like four times. I need to find a house to stay in. I found a foreclosure that was really a nice house. I decided to stay in that one. I moved into this big house I was going to live in. I only had bedroom furniture. Oh, right. It was it. I thought, okay, we're going to stay here. We're going to put down roots. She's going to start school. Now I'm going to do all those things I've been wanting to do. But I had enough money to hire people to help me out. So slowly I decorated the house, you know, rehabbed the house, and but stayed put. And even people were like, but you just like you move every few months. I'm like, I know, but I still can't afford to rent an apartment and make payments on this hard money lending and this loans and these things I'm getting. I can't do it yet. So I got to live in it to try to save money. And I did. And you know, looking back, those are probably some of the most fun times because we just didn't really have a lot, but we were always hanging out. And she's like a little adult. And we just listening to music and Disney and singing and dancing and painting and just having fun. And I'd let her paint all over the floor because I was going to put carpet down later anyway. And paint and mud and stuff. But the house, the funny thing is, the house that we moved into, it's like, yeah, now listen, we're going to live in this house. So you can't paint the walls, can't all those things. This is the house we're going to keep in. And so I remember one day she was, you know, when your kids get real quiet, you're like, she got all her paint out. She's painted all over the walls. Stars and moons. And part of me was like, did I not just say that? But I thought, you know what? That's what she's used to. She decorated her own room. It's hers. And I just loved it.
So now you started wholesaling. Now, I get a lot of questions about wholesaling. So, and you did a lot in that year. You said 70, over 70?
75, my first year.
Wow, 75. So how did you do it? And what are tips for those people who are thinking, I love wholesaling, but I don't know how to do it? How did you do it? How did you do it so quickly and wisely and strategically?
Well, you know, the main thing, and I know a lot of people, when I say this, they're going to be like, oh, I don't know, Dwan. Again, we didn't have ways to email people or find them. That didn't exist. Right. So I would go door knocking. I would go to the courthouse in Palm Beach County, Florida. I would write all the foreclosures down. I would map them out. I'd take baby on my hip or toddling along with me. And I went door knocking. And when you show up at people's door, and you have a baby and you're like, hey, listen, you know, I buy houses. I see you're having some trouble. I want to help you get out of your situation. Everyone was just really, really receptive to me. And one of the things I really noticed, especially when I started door knocking to that extent to just flip houses like crazy woman, 80% of the people that answered the door were women. And they were going through divorces and their husbands were gone. And I was like, listen, girl, let me tell you what my man just did to me. He took off, took the money, took the car, and here I am with my daughter. I'm, you know, and so I think that common bond, and people would just like let me in and talk, and I was just wholesaling. Now, after a couple of years, I thought, okay, I guess I don't need to wholesale 75 houses a year because it was like 100 times more than everybody else was doing. But I really loved it, and I had fun, and people, and I got to help so many people that no one ever came to the door to help them. They just got postcards and letters and the same things that like everyone does the same old thing. And I just really realized pretty quickly that I more than the money, I had the heart for helping people.
Right.
So I thought, you know, if I just help all these people out, I'll make money because you do good and it'll come to you. First year, I was so worried about money. I was all about the money. I would never have done anything to screw anybody, but I was all about money. And I didn't even really think about the homeowner or what they were going through because I was so traumatized. But by the second year, you know, I'm settling down mentally and I'm realizing, and I'm meeting these other women, I'm like, wow, there's a lot of us out there going through some crappy stuff.
Now, how did you find all these places? Because how did you know, I want to become a wholesaler? How did you figure out which doors to knock on and which one not to knock on?
I would go to the courthouse and the courthouses nowadays, I think every courthouse, I don't know about Canada, but I know every single courthouse in the United States is online. So you can just type in whatever county and type in the courthouse and you can go online and you can find the things that are public record. So that's the foreclosures, the probate, the divorces, the bankruptcies. It's all public record. But before that, when I started, you had to physically drive to the courthouse. You had to handwrite the addresses, the name, the people. And so I would write all the addresses of the people in foreclosure. And I would just singly go knock on the doors of people that were in foreclosure. Okay. And I basically would just say, hey, listen, I buy and sell foreclosures. I see you have a problem with your property. I went through the same thing and I try to help people out. And if you need to move and get a fresh start and move on, you know, we can work together.
I love how you made sure to have that connection with them as well, right? It wasn't just a numerical transaction. You made sure to build a bit of a relationship where they felt that somebody going through separation or divorce that, hey, I know what it's like. I've been there and I know that it's not easy, but I also know that you're going to feel and be in a better place in a year or two from now.
And I would just, you know, share my story. And not that I was sharing it even to try to build a connection, I think I felt like I didn't want them, I wanted them to know that they weren't alone. And there was men, you know, always, but about 80% of the time, which is, it's so weird the way that worked out my first few years, was almost always women. And I was like, girl, listen, I was crying. I wanted to kill my ex. I was so angry. I know. But you know what? Look at me now. I'm helping you. And, you know, you can go help other people. And then that's what made me start teaching. I thought, well, let me just teach people how to do this. Because if I can do 50 deals a year and I teach 50 people to do 50 deals a year, we can help all these people.
I love it. Now, okay, so you did wholesaling, but now I know you're doing other things. So how did the journey continue to grow and what exactly are you focusing on now?
I stayed solid with wholesaling for a long time. And when my daughter was 13, I got remarried. So I was single for 13 years. And my poor husband, he's my third one. I had one of those quick 20 when you're like 21 and you're stupid and you have like a 3-month marriage. And I had the one to, you know, my daughter's father. So by the time Bill came along, I said, now listen to me. I've got like 20 rentals. I own a real estate investing group. I've written a book. I'm a single mom. There's a lot of laws got to be laid down over here. Ringer man. I was like, I'm not taking crap from any man. So well, poor Bill, but he passed with flying colors because we just had our 19-year wedding anniversary. So I had done 800 deals, and knowing how much work it takes to do 800 deals, I'm like, okay, this guy's not just some, I do a deal here and there. He's at 800 deals. He knows what he's doing. I was like, wow, we could put that together.
Wow. When you say deals, do you mean, what does he do? Wholesaler as well or agent?
He was mostly wholesaling. Okay. And so when we first got married, we did a lot of wholesaling still. We both still like to do rehabbing. So we do fixing up and selling. And I know on all these HGTV, they call fix and flipping. So people don't really know the real words for things anymore, but rehabbing is not flipping. So we rehabbed. And we started buying commercial buildings and, you know, we just bought more rentals along the way. And then a couple of years ago, he's from a very small town in Iowa called Clinton, Iowa. And I mean, it's a little 3-block by 3-block downtown on the river. And every 5 years we go back to these high school reunions. And I was like, man, this little town needs some love. Like, so this last reunion, I said, you know, let's see what they're doing down here. Maybe we could like buy a building or something. That might be fun. Own a commercial building and, you know, bring a little life to the downtown. And we found out they were doing a full downtown rejuvenation. There's a whole downtown partnership. There's grant money, all this stuff. So we decided to buy 2 buildings. But then, and this is in the last 24 months, Mel, then we bought those 2. So there's a Rotary Club still, which is like the little old lady thing at the Rotary Club. So one woman told this woman, she says, hey, I heard you guys bought a couple rental buildings. I've got 3 I'd like to get rid of. My husband passed away. I'm 78. And we're like, all right, we could buy 3 more. Another woman called. She had 2. Another woman called. She had 3. Wow. Sitting empty for like a decade. So I was like, all right, well, we're going to put all of our mad skills together. So we own 30% of this little downtown now. And we just started with the building that needed the least amount of work, fix it up, put in an antique mall, and just went to the building one by one by one. We have 2 buildings that we haven't touched yet because they're like massive. They're 3-story buildings. They need like everything. So I said, well, let's just start with the ones that need the least and rent the spaces out. So now we've got 1 building that is an entire city block, the whole building. And yeah, every single space is rented. There's a nail salon and there's a nurse and there's a massage and there's a juice bar and there's a shops and clothing. And I don't know, this little downtown just like bustling.
Now I know what listeners are probably thinking, or at least some of them are probably thinking, number one, how did you come up with the financing for this? And number two, given that they were empty, how did the cash flow, did you have a plan, I guess, because when you started off, it sounds like there wasn't any cash flow coming in. So how did you make sure to kind of make that all happen?
The first 2, we got them super cheap. Like one was $30,000, one was $40,000. So we just paid cash. Okay. But then when the next one, when the lady called, she had 3. Now she and her husband had owned these buildings their whole life. her husband had passed away, and she just kind of let the buildings just sit there. And I was like, well, we would only be able to do it if you just did owner financing. And she didn't know what it was. So we explained, like, you know, we'll do a mortgage and we'll send you payments, but we can't give you any money down because your buildings need a lot of work. So all of those ladies in town owner financed every single one of those buildings.
100% owner finance.
100%.
Love it.
All of them.
Boom, it can be done.
And I was just like, okay. Then we had 8 on my building. We had 10, we had to stop. And then like another phone call. And I was like, oh my gosh. Okay, one more, but that's really seriously it. And then now we have 15. Wow. Okay. But they all owner finance. And when the first woman did it, she told her friends, like, listen, because they were all moving to Florida. Like, they all know each other forever. And they're like, all we want is we never want to come back to Clinton, Iowa, because it's really cold there. We want you to send us a check every month that we can spend it in Florida. And so when the first woman did it, she told her friends, if you'll just let them send you payments, we'll take your buildings. Okay. So when they called, they're like, hey, we heard you took Claire's building. We'll do the same thing if you'll just send us money every month. And I was like, looking around like, okay, am I being punked right now? Who just calls you up and says, you can have my buildings because you did that with my friend? So literally, like, God just shined down on us, and they're all owner financed. I know you like stuff like that, so.
I love owner financing, and that's a nice thing about it. There's so many different ways. They can be in first place where they hold the first mortgage, or in second place, or 100%. We've done a few of the 100% deals as well, and it doesn't fit for everyone because they do have to have their building paid in full in order to do that. So again, it's not everybody can do that, but exactly, somebody who's had the building for years and years, who did pay it off, it's a win-win for them. They don't have to worry about it.
A couple of them were rented, but some of the bigger ones, they have been vacant forever and ever and ever and ever. And they have, you know, the roof leak, and like the buildings are just, you know. So we do have two buildings that we fixed the roofs on them, but they're going to be a project.
Now, who's going to be doing all this work? Do you have a team? Do you outsource? How do you maintain everything?
Oh girl, I don't know. When I actually say all this stuff out loud, I'm thinking, what are we doing? My husband is that man that really truly loves to fix things and build with his hands. And if he doesn't have a physical project, he is so miserable. And my son is the same way. So we have a crew, yes. So we have crews and we have teams, but they fly to Iowa twice a month and stay for a week, and he gets in there and works, and he's all dirty, and he's so excited, he's like sawdust in his hair, and he's like the happiest guy on the face of the earth. I said, what are you gonna do when the buildings are done? We're gonna have to buy more, I need a project. So I am literally married to a guy, 63, and he really just loves building and working, and the thing is, he's Bill's really creative. It's like one of our antique mall, we built a ghost town in there. So we took looked at pictures of all these old ghost towns where you walk in, it's like walking back into the Wild West, and like they built everything from scratch. So we do have a crew that works obviously when we're not there, but any major things, Bill's always there to, you know, make sure it's done right and just to be creative. And I'm telling you, that little downtown is looking, it's so bustly right now.
Right.
And everything looks so good. But now I do not do any of the rehabbing. I was like, listen, I am 62 years old. My days of swinging hammers are long gone. I'm happy to walk through the buildings. I'm happy to go over ideas. It was my idea to do the ghost town. I said, we'll lay the ghost town out. Here's what we'll do. This is what I want it to look like. I'm the ideal person, but I'm not hammering in not a nail.
All right. What advice would you give to your younger self?
Well, it depends on how young we went. If we went into my 20s, I would say don't do drugs.
Let's go in your 20s and let's hop in your 30s, let's say.
In my 20s, I would say stop being stupid. In my 30s, I would say, yeah, I'm not really sure. I think I would say if you have an idea or a concept, I would rather work for myself and set it for the man and make somebody else wealthy. I would rather just try it on my own. And I would tell people, don't let your naysayers and your people that mean well stop you, because I had a whole lot of that, as I'm sure you can imagine. And I would say, you know what, work for yourself, build your wealth, build your own dreams, build your goals, and just don't be afraid to fail. Just do it anyway.
Great.
Because I was terrified to fail, but I was more terrified of getting a job and putting my daughter in daycare.
Well, either way, there's a risk. And sometimes people don't realize that not doing it is also a risk of not changing or not achieving your goals. That's a big risk as well. And it's yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, Mel, if I had been afraid to try something on my own and I got a job, I knew I would end up in that job till she was 18 and I would wake up and be 50 one day and have worked my entire life for somebody else. So why not try myself first? And if I fail, that's a backup option, but that backup option is way worse than not trying.
Second question, what's the number one tip you would give someone who wants to get started in real estate?
Well, I would tell them something that you said to me earlier as well. I would tell them to find someone like you and find someone like me and to find a mentor and have the voice of a mentor in your head instead of your own voice that says, you can't do it. What if you fail? And your family and friends saying, you can't do that. You can't, you don't know what you're doing. I would say get the voice of a mentor rolling into your head that's encouraging you and guiding you and leading you, because you really can do it, but your mindset can really hold you back big time.
Well, you're amazing. I'm so glad that we connected, Dawn. Dawn, how can people follow you? How can they connect with you?
Super easy. It's Dwanderful. So just D-W-A-N-D-E-R, like F-U-R, Dwan, like wonderful, but Dwanderful. So dwanderful.com, I have 4 free ebooks that are just kind of give people like a little idea of some things that are out there. And then I'm on, you know, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, everything's at Dwanderful. So I'm pretty easy to find. You're just, my pink hair stands out, so you can't miss me.
There you go. Make sure to go follow her. She's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much for spending time with me again. I really enjoyed our chat.
Well, thank you, Mel. God bless you, honey. I had so much fun today.
Dawn, thank you so much for being on the show. I absolutely loved my interview with you. You have such amazing energy. You're compassionate as well. Thanks so much for sharing your journey with us. One thing that really stands out is that we all have a past, but it's always a choice to take action despite the barriers that we face. So I encourage you to take action right now and check out this next video. I'm Investor Mel, and I'll see you there.